the depths of the ocean. She's a deep blue sea. Makes her cry out in despair when she gets a hold of me.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This song is called The Anima from Milwaukee area musician Culla. Newest album is called Firebird. It's the 16th, and it was named the most unique album of the year by the Wisconsin Area Music Industry Awards. Call in with a question, share a comment along the way at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Ian McCullough, also known as Culla, is a multidisciplinary artist, songwriter, computer engineer, and entrepreneur. Culla, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. Really happy to be here.
Well, take us into The Anima and what you appreciate about this song.
Sure, yeah. The Anima comes from Jungian psychology. Mm. It's the divine feminine in the masculine, kind of like the yin and the yang. And it's very much about Carl Jung's concept of the maturation of the anima in a man. And Sophia, which is the chorus of that song, is the highest level of maturity of the concept, the conceptual nature of feminine in masculine. Like Sophia is the second half of philosophy, philos Sophia, the love of divine knowledge.
How did it come to you in song, in verse?
Well, it just came. You know, got that nice blues guitar tone, and I had been thinking about it for a while, and try not to think too hard about channeling some of that type of creativity in songs, but had some intention to discover pieces of that and explore how to do that. But
do you explore psychology and or was this kind of a one-off theme for a song that it would dig deep into psychology?
No, I've been exploring particularly Jungian psychology in song for the past few years, at least probably since 2019, more intentionally. It's I find as an artist it is rich with lots of good maps of how to make meaning out of things, which is very useful as a storyteller and a songwriter to have some clear mapping of what is what, and it gives lots of images and clear direction.
Mm, we could use some clear mapping today in this world, right? You know, you're unique, according to the Wisconsin Area Music Industry Awards, your newest album, Firebird, a unique album of the year. Why do you imagine people perceive your music as unique?
Well, I believe it's unique, or they've labeled it as unique and voted it in as unique, because that album in particular, which isn't uncommon amongst the rest of my albums, but each song has a different style, mood, and genre that almost are very disparate of each other, in relation with each other. So the Anima here is kind of more of a blues gospel song, but the other songs, there's a bluegrass song, there's a neo soul hip hop spoken word song, and then there's also a more electronic operatic song called The Feather. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just a seemingly disparate styles that come together. And I think that's what makes it unique, blending of the different styles that might not necessarily be bedfellows, but here they are.
How does your computer engineering degree and your media technology degree background fold into your music? How does that technical side influence what comes out of you in these albums?
Yeah, since I was very little, I've been very interested in the convergence between technology and creativity. My father was a computer scientist and would bring home lots of different pieces of electronic equipment to build computers and peripherals and accessories for computers. And so I explored that and just explored software at an early age alongside exploring music. And so to me, they were very much almost the same type of creative expression and etude of exploring these different things. And so it's more natural to me, but I think in the age of the democratization of sound is what we refer to it at, when we have integrated circuits and little microcontrollers that are cheap and accessible at a consumer level, we now have the ability to compose using these technologies and kind of can maybe skip some of those rigorous academic and challenging steps of notation and synthesis and recording, these things that would take large amounts of budgets and expertise perhaps 50 to 100 years ago. But now they're just at our fingertips, a few clicks here and there, and you can whir up some sounds and synthesize. And so I've always just explored it because it's quite accessible.
It seems to me when you talk about disparate, you know, you've got your love of the piano, which is like super low tech if you don't, you know, if it's not like a keyboard, but, you know, the piano, and then you've got all of these circuitries and the software side of things, and somehow you put all that together. And that to me must be really interesting for you because you appreciate both so much.
Yeah, well, the piano is quite an engineering feat itself.
Yes.
If you look at it, and actually, if anyone's ever looked inside a piano and look at it and say, what the heck is going on in there? To your point, yeah, then to convert that mechanism of pianos is quite a, yeah, very, very interesting and powerful mechanism. Now then to interface it with digital technology and to be able to trigger different pieces of software, and now we have artificial intelligence and stuff, which is a whole nother beast. But yeah, I find it very kind of similar. To me, they're the same in a lot of ways. I find many people see that as conflicting, or perhaps things that are that don't mix well, creativity and logic or things of that nature, like you're kind of alluding to. But to me, I find them as the same. I get the same feeling when you create a piece of software that someone can utilize. I get the same sense of satisfaction and perhaps pride in a way where someone is utilizing this creation of mine and it gets to become alive and grows bigger than your initial intention. I find that to be a similar feeling than when I create a song.
Talking with Milwaukee area musician Kulla as part of a series of conversations with Wisconsin musicians, and you can join in the conversation as well at 800-642-1234. You've released albums annually, apparently on your birthday, April 27th, and we're going to hear another song from Firebird. This one is titled The King.
I'm a soldier of fortune, incredibly. I'm the luckiest man I've ever seen. Soon enough, my luck will change. Then I lose my grip on my reins to my brain. Dive into the world beyond. That's reality, a travesty, you don't say. A full of pretty stood up to me, saw the part of him retire. Always caused his nights to light up, sitting by the fire and brimstone.
So what is the inspiration for this song, The King?
Well, it's in the album Firebird, which is wholly inspired by the Slavic myth of Ivan and the Firebird. And that track, The King, refers to kind of the end of a hero's journey, when the hero becomes king. A lot of people know that of the hero's journey, or perhaps have heard of a hero. And hero is actually an immature archetype in psychology, where they are on their journey to become fully mature, and the king is that. And so this song, actually, I knew that I wanted to come up with this kingly experience and transformation in this album. So I looked back in some of my old songs that I had never released, and I ended up finding this song called Usurper of the Throne that I had made 12 years ago. And I recreated it with some great musicians here in Milwaukee, and kind of changed it a little bit here and there. But those words are really the words of me over a decade ago, looking forward as where could I be as in my transformation and in my maturation. So it's a very interesting thing when I hear it, and when I experience the meaning and intention of that, is because it's all about the maturation and the grabbing or the transforming of power into something more mature, but yet it's through the lens of an immature.
Oh, well, thank you for that. Let's go to Lisa in Milwaukee. Lisa, hi.
Hi, good morning. Hey, I was, I'm curious about your music, and now that you're talking about a king, I was just thinking there's a Bible story about a king called King David, and he used to play his harp for Saul, who was also a king before David was, but it used to calm his soul. Is that something your music could do for people, calm their soul?
First of all, Lisa, thank you for your comment and for the reference into the King David and the harp, because that's a beautiful story. And as far as calming the soul, that's something that I've intentionally made in my music since the beginning, for 16 years. The first 5-6 years, I would make the music just to calm my own soul, truly. And I wouldn't release it or even share it with anyone. But then I would start to release them, and then I would get great feedback from people that would tell me incredible experiences that they would have about how the music made them feel and how it would get them through very hard times, sometimes quite graphic and very uncomfortable times, that they're describing to me. So I truly believe that is a part of my vocation and my mission here in this world, is to use music to express some of these stories and these feelings to calm or give some sense of solace in the woe.
Kulla is a Milwaukee area musician and entrepreneur. This is The Golden Apple, as we explore the wide-ranging sounds from Wisconsin's music scene. And you can be part of the discussion with a question at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.
I can bite you on your arm.
It tastes delicious.
Like a flush red apple skin. I know you don't mean harm.
You seem suspicious.
But your smile is quite enchanting. A thread of your hair sewn with your needle stare, and a rhinestone glare, a wave of fiery love, taking full control and swallowed me whole. Stop.
It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is I Don't Mind It from the 2019 album Spectacula by Kulla, recognized by the Wisconsin Area Music Industry Awards for the uniqueness of his most recent album. Also a nationally touring musician. Share your thoughts about music. Call in with a question at 800-642-1234. Kulla, we heard from Stan, who sent in a question asking you, where is your favorite place to record music?
That's a great question. Yeah, I say my most favorite place that I've recorded in has been in a shack up in near Wausau, in a place called Athens, Wisconsin, where there's no internet, there's no service for your cell phone. It's just you in the calmness of the beautiful nature of Wisconsin. I find that to be some of the best places and moments to channel the creativity and to channel the inspiration from all the amazing and beautiful natural things that Wisconsin has to offer.
You've also been compared to Beck, the musician, the Beck of Milwaukee, as some people say. How does that feel to you?
I mean, I love Beck. I definitely take that as a compliment. And I've grew up listening to him. So It is, you know, it's, I'll leave the comparisons to everyone else, but I take that as a compliment.
You've released 16 albums as open source material, music free for non-commercial uses. Why is that important to you?
Yeah, I think alluding a little bit back to the previous conversation, just what we talked about with how the synthesizer and how the democratization of sound has occurred because of it. I think the internet and the distribution that comes with that brings completely different forcing functions for marketplace dynamics and value exchange. And I think that when it comes to releasing things as non-commercial, I grew up on the internet. At the early stages of it, I remember dialing up very young, and music is quite ubiquitous now with streaming. So to me, I felt in two things. One, I felt like it was the ethical and moral thing to do to share my experiences and to share everything and allow my creation to be utilized amongst anyone who wanted to. But on the other end, it's also, I think, an economic and distribution advantage, because now you're lowering the barrier of entry for folks to utilize these intellectual property and these creative works. But at the same time, you know, I feel as a musician, and I would recommend to other musicians as well, to make sure you're to lower the barrier of entry and not try to hold on to your things as much as possible. Just be okay with sharing it, because music is quite a cheap commodity in terms of streaming. We look at it now, and most times it's free.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it made sense to not try to fight that and perhaps embrace that and try to utilize that and turn it around and give it away.
Can you make a living with that level of sharing?
Yeah, you can. So not everybody is looking for non-commercial. You talk to folks with budgets and lawyers, and they want nice licenses and they want things on their balance sheets to be clear, and they don't mess around with certain quote unquote gray areas of legal and creative licensing, which I use Creative Commons.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a form of distribution. Just as you, maybe people have heard of the term exposure, right? This is a thing that musicians have quite wrestle with, this term. They have love-hate relationships with exposure, because, well, exposure maybe might not get you, you know, you can't take exposure to the bank, but you can monetize exposure through many different ways. And as we see now with the internet in particular, and experiences where you have opportunities to get in front of many people, it is now, it's your responsibility as that performer or as that artist to make sure that you are able to connect with that audience and have mechanisms in place in order to monetize you from that exposure.
Talking with Milwaukee area musician Kulla as part of our series of conversations this summer with Wisconsin musicians. The number is 800-642-1234 to join in. You mentioned AI much earlier. How will artificial intelligence change the music business?
It's a great question. I don't have the crystal ball. I wish I did. It's from what I can gather, and from because I have conversations about this quite often with folks in panels and stuff deep into new bleeding edge technology conversations with people much more qualified than myself that speak on this. There's one analogy that I've heard, which is keeps getting reused when there's new technology around, but the idea of the Gutenberg press and how that changed how we perceive writing. Whereas before the Gutenberg press, before you could copy print, it took quite a lot of effort to write the words from, you know, one to copy the manuscript over manually. And the scribes at the time, you know, were quite, they would look at it and say, well, this isn't real. That you don't actually know what those words mean. I'm writing, I know what the meaning of is. I'm writing the words physically, this physical act. So you could find analogy in that, where now we have just a new tool that can give more power towards someone who has a sense of creativity. Just like I mentioned about the democratization of sound, where you have a synthesizer, where I can have a keyboard that's plugged into my computer and have access to an orchestra. Now, perhaps you could just tell it a couple things just from a prompt.
There's a song somewhere in there. Fascinating discussion. Thank you for joining us, Kulla.
Thanks so much, Kate. I'm so happy to be here.
Kulla, Milwaukee area musician, entrepreneur, newest album, Firebird. This is Raining Fire from his 2009 album. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back.